And we're on. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to the BAMF podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And with us today is my co-host, Walt Rebilliard from Hazard Studios. How you doing, Walt?
Rock and roll.
Hey, thanks for joining us again. And we also have special guests from Green Ronin, however you want to say it, Mr. Will Hindmarch. How you doing, Will?
I'm well. How are you?
All right. Hey, and how do you say it, Ronin or Ronin?
I say it Ronin, but I know people that say it happily both ways.
All right. Well, different strokes for different folks.
And I actually speak that lingo, and that is pronounced correctly, Ronin.
You're fluent in Japanese, Walt?
Hi, so that's not, yes.
Nice.
Damn, that's impressive. I didn't know that about you.
Well, you know, I speak five languages other than English. So basically, every time I'm in another country, I don't trust the translators. They always direct you to the worst food. So it helps to learn.
Damn, Walt. Wow, okay. I'm intimidated. You speak German?
I do not.
Well, I got that on you, ha.
Ha ha.
Okay, Mike Lifery's ego is a stage for the next 5 minutes, so. Hey, moving right on. We're here to talk about Will. And Will, you are the most recent employee of Green Ronin Studios.
I'm tied with developer Joe Carricker. We're both brand new.
Oh, yeah, he's the licensing dude, right?
He's in right now as the Song of Ice and Fire developer.
Okay, yeah. I'm guessing that's a big deal with the success of the TV show.
You know, we're hoping. I actually don't have numbers, unfortunately, on what kind of a attention that the TV show has gotten for Song of Ice and Fire, the RPG per se. But, I mean, certainly people are Googling, you know, everything involving Game of Thrones and are finding the RPG, so we're very happy about that.
Yeah. Now, I've got several geek friends who seem to want to work Winter is Coming into every conversation under some pretext, so.
Sure.
There's buzz, that's what I'm saying. You know, I'm looking at wordstudio.net, looking at your background, your resume there, and damn, Will, I wish I was you, man. You've worked with Will Wheaton, you've worked for The Escapist, you've worked with White Wolf, Wizards of the Coast, you've written essays, stories, plays, you're a graphics designer, you've written comic books. I mean, damn, man, you're a renaissance man.
My goal in the long run is to write one of everything. So it's a big mountain to climb. I'm only part way up it. So.
Okay. Hey, I see on your watching tab on your page, you recently saw Killer Elite.
I did. Yeah, yeah. A friend of mine was a big fan of the book it was based on, called I'm going to get this wrong. It's The Featherman, or it's something about The Featherman.
Yeah, it's The Featherman, the old SAS guys who had kind of like a Star Chamber. Yeah.
Yeah, which I'm embarrassed to admit I have not read the book, but it came so highly recommended that I went along and saw the movie, and so I feel like I'm kind of that guy who saw the movie instead of reading the book, but I really enjoyed it. It has a great setup for a, I don't want to say convoluted, but you know, a happily complex kind of back and forth spy story. So it was a good time.
Yeah, my girlfriend has a thing for Jason Statham, so that's why I saw it. But, it was a lot deeper than I thought, because usually Jason Statham is just like, hey, I'm going to kick you in the face now. But, and that was a horrible accent. It was more Australian than English. But, you know.
It was a good try.
Thank you. You're very generous. But, yeah, there was more going on there. I was pleasantly surprised by that movie, and I wish it had done better. Hey, Walt, you're a military man. You seen that movie?
I have not yet, but I do. I did see the one that he did previously, The Mechanic, and that was a lot of fun too. So I mean, usually his movies are, a good popcorn Saturday movie, and I'm sure that one was pretty much along the same lines.
I definitely want to check out. Okay, so you have been doing tons of stuff in the RPG business, and if we dive into Walt, we might be here for hours and hours, but of everything you've done the last couple of years before coming on with the Green Ronin, what's been your favorite or your highlight?
Oh man, that's a great and tough question. It's weird. I go through every couple of months. I go through these phases where my instinct about what I'm going to work on next changes. And so every once in a while I think, well, for the next 4 or 5 months, I'm going to focus on fiction, or I'm going to finish a couple of spec scripts and I'm going to have those ready in the portfolio just in case or whatever. But RPGs are always what I come back to. And so some of my still long-term favorite products are things like Damnation City for White Wolf. That was one of the big books we did for Vampire. I mean big in the sense of it was a physically large book. But also a lot of the writing about games, which is why Jeff Tidball and I founded Game Playwright Press when we did, was to get books published that we couldn't otherwise find homes for. that are about games rather than being games themselves. So things like Things We Think About Games that Jeff and I wrote is definitely a favorite of mine. And I have an essay in a book called Second Person, which is this full title, I think, is Second Person Role-Playing and Story in Games and Media, or Playable Media, from MIT Press, which is edited by the great Pat Harrigan and Noah Wardrip Fruin. That's full of great essays and great talent. And so that's just being in a book like that was a great privilege.
And if someone wants to check out some of the stuff from Games Playwright Press, where can they go for that?
Oh, we are at gameplaywright.net, and that is spelled like the word game and then the word playwright all smashed together.
Okay, cool, cool. Something to check out. Okay, now, very recently, there was a 10th competition to get hired by Green Ronin. They had some opening slots, and you were the winner of one of those, and you are now the developer for the Dragon Age line. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And I see you've done some work before with online stuff, Lord of the Rings Online, and does that make this kind of an easier transition for you because you kind of got a foot both in the pen and paper world and the digital world?
A little bit. I mean, I have some experience with writing for licensed worlds and pre-existing worlds and fantasy worlds, which I think was a big help. Truth be told, I think one of the tipping points was I had the opportunity to play and then run Dragon Age with a couple of Green Ronin folks at conventions. And I think that's kind of a – and I think one of those I think was an audition almost for the gig. So,
well, hey, I'm going to open this up. Sorry, my dog might bark in the background. There's some coyotes howling out here. I'm out by the mountains, so I'll get some of that. You guys both in the Dragon Age, and I don't. So let me just open it up. If you two guys were at a convention table and newbie walked up and said, I don't know Dragon Age, sell me on it. How would you do that? And, Walt, why don't you go first, and we'll get to Will.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dragon Age is one of those things that has such an established following that you know, somebody who's going to approach you at a convention is probably going to know at least a little bit about it, if not have seen an advertisement on TV or maybe even over the net. I mean, they had a great net presence when they released the first one, and then with the second one, and they have not only the downloadable content that has become pretty popular, but also rising stars on the internet media front, such as Felicia Day making videos about it. It's really hard to have somebody in the gaming community who hasn't seen something, at least, about Dragon Age. So that's at least one draw to the pen and paper side, I think.
I agree completely. I mean, I have a player in my playtest game right now who is aware of Dragon Age in a general media sense, but is a pen and paper role player to the Dragon Age universe first, and a video gamer a distant second. And so I recently had to kind of make a pitch about what the setting was like. It was great experience, a great practice for communicating what Dragon Age really is without having to hone in on any one of the video games as an example or any one of the RPG products as an example. And it's an interesting thing. The Dragon Age universe is so big, is so wonderfully multifaceted. It's this sort of web of different conflicting beliefs and opinions and forces. And so boiling it down is almost always feels kind of inadequate, because if to just describe, you know, the Chantry as the church of the Dragon Age universe, the church of Thedas, is leaving out so much of the detail that makes the Chantry interesting. And describing the church versus magic conflicts takes away so much of the nuance and the fact that it's usually conflicts between specific characters. So the Dragon Age lends itself very well to very quickly getting into storytelling about Dragon Age, in which you say, well, so apostates feel this way or that way, but really there's this one named Anders, or there's this one named Morrigan, and they're cool because, and you very quickly get into the individual stories. And I think that's a great strength about the way the setting is built.
Absolutely. And even getting back to the familiarity of it. During Halloween, I was passing out candy at the house, and I had this little Chihuahua Jack Russell mix, but we painted her like a Mabari Warhound.
Oh, excellent.
And, yeah, it was fun. And, I mean, so, you know, she came to the door with me to hand out candy, and, you know, this little 8-year-old goes, hey, Dad, look, that's the Mabuna war dog that you have on your video game. Now, granted, he was 8 and he mispronounced it, but even still, you know, when Dad looked up and said, oh, yeah, I'm a Dragon Age fan, you know, what can you do except, you know, run to your video game system, grab the box, and say, hey, man, I got you.
Right on.
Now, when you came to Green Ronin, was it just you sitting down with the Green Ronin folks and saying, hey, you know, I accept this position and let's rock and roll with this? Or did you get to meet with any of the guys from EA or David Gator or any of those guys?
In this case, it was a well, first thing I should say is that the day that Green Ronin put up the posting for a developer position, when I didn't know for sure what position that was, I literally, like, I saw the posting at something like 10 a.m. Central Time, and then I sharpened my resume and I had it sent off by 2 because I wanted that gig so bad. Because Green Ronin is just such a great company to work for, and I they're weirdly one of the few companies that I had never worked with in the RPG sector, although I had worked on books or products with a bunch of people in Green Ronin, whether it was the like I worked in the Family Games 100 Best series. I did an essay for that book. I had gamed with a couple of Green Ronin people. I knew them all in one form or another, just kind of tangentially from conventions and such. But they just had such a great rep as a company, and it was a part-time gig, which is perfect for the fact that I still freelance. So it was just a great fit. So I aimed that resume as well as I could to with all of my previous RPG development experience. But in terms of the actual assignment, it was almost all with Green Ronin. I didn't come to email or talk with the BioWare team until after I was hired. So it was all we have a remarkable amount of freedom when it comes to doing the RPG, and so Chris had the freedom to hire who he thought was going to work best for Green Ronin. I mean, unless it's entirely possible that I had to be vetted and I just don't know it, but I would be surprised, I guess.
Well, let me ask you guys just a basic question, because like I say, my Dragon Age cherry is still, you know, unviolated. if I was coming to you guys, I'd only played, say, you know, Dungeons & Dragons, and, you know, maybe some Lord of the Rings flavored Dungeons & Dragons before, and I would say to you, well, how is this different from Middle-earth, or how is this different from Forgotten Realms? How would you give me an elevator pitch about it?
Do you want to take that one first?
Sure. The first thing I would do is I would try to sniff out whether you were asking me mechanically or asking me as part of the setting. In this case, I think you're asking me about the setting.
Yeah, I'm much more of a fluff guy. I'm a fluffer, if you will, so that's what I'd be interested in.
Thank you. We'll be here all week.
Try the veal. Tip your waist off. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The veal is delicious. It was the first thing I ordered. So Dragon Age starts with – it has elves. It has dwarves. So you have a certain shorthand that will get you into the setting right away, but it turns some of these things immediately on their heads. So that elves are not the superior, elegant, completely. I mean, they're an ancient peoples, but they've sort of been turned inside out from the Tolkien model. And I think that's a great place to start when describing Dragon Age, is just the way that the human to elf relationship works, because it's sort of an example of how Dragon Age takes things that are familiar and turns them not just completely inside out. It doesn't just, you know, it's not like it turns Middle Earth upside down like the Midnight game did from Fantasy Flight Games, in which was the game about where Sauron won, but was otherwise very much like Middle Earth. Dragon Age takes the very idea of elves and turns them into, for one, a diffuse, separate people, where you have the Dalish elves that live outside of human civilization and are trying to make a place for themselves in a world that they inhabited before humans did. And then you have the city elves who live in alienages inside human cities and are kind of second-class citizens and former slaves in a lot of cases, or descended from former slaves, and are looking to make themselves a place within human society. And that completely different sense of origin and a completely different dynamic they have with humans, in which it's not like where they mentor humans like I feel like elves so often do in Tolkien. And it's not as easy as saying that they're at war with humans, excuse me, but that they have a very complex, morally gray relationship with humanity. And that grayness, the fact that it is sometimes shining knights and sometimes black-hearted villains and sometimes blood-streaked battles for what somebody believes is right, is always tempered by a moral challenge in Dragon Age. One of the things that we say in the RPG is we want the game to be about moral choices that matter. So it's almost never that there's an easy choice that you can say, well, that guy's evil, and therefore we should get rid of him. You might say that guy is evil, and how do we get rid of him? And the manner in which we do so is more complicated than simply saying, well, then I'll just rally up an adventuring party and we'll slay him, because everybody's in the party for different motives, with different motives, and everybody might want him dead for different reasons, or some people might think he has to be pardoned, or the cost of removing him from power might be greater than the danger of leaving him in power for until you can quietly remove him in some other means. And the RPG, the pen and paper RPG, is a great fit for Dragon Age's morally gray, blood-splattered universe, because not everything has to be reduced down to two or three different dialogue choices. And BioWare does a great job of this in terms of giving you these complex, difficult choices within the bounds of the game technology. But when you can then choose anything for your character to say, and the players can inherently bring in their own dynamics in which each player plays a character who wants an objectively different thing, finding that moral complexity and that complex character dynamic where it's multiple different forces colliding in Dragon Age can be very simple. It can be very fun. It can be very easy to set up.
One of the things that one of my friends asked me recently, about the set was, or about, you know, the line in general, was along those same lines. And then when I came back, I thought an easy way to say it was, you know, your average fantasy game or even your average fantasy story uses, you know, certain morals and character outlooks to tell an adventure story. Whereas with Dragon Age, you're using the adventure to tell a story about morality and how morality is approached from different viewpoints. So that technically you have no one viewpoint that is right or wrong. It's just what everybody's perception of it is at the time.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Dragon Age presents a great many different perspectives, and it doesn't necessarily endorse any of them, which is really, I find, compelling. And I've had just a couple of players who find that at first a pleasant hurdle, an obstacle that they like to climb on top of and look around. That sense of, well, I don't know exactly then, how does my character feel about this? You know, what team should I join up with? And that shorthand exists just enough to get characters made. But after that, what your character thinks isn't prescribed by being an elf or by being a dwarf or by being a human or by being a human from this land or that land. There's so much variety, and everybody has compelling and believably, sometimes fallible, sometimes earthly, muddled, unglamorous reasons for thinking what they think. And it's hard to say who's right and who's wrong sometimes.
Let me ask you, when it originally came out, I heard a lot of comparisons between the Dragon Age RPG and old school, you know, clones like Osric. I haven't actually played it. I mean, is that an accurate description? Is it going to go for the older, you know, more simple first ed feel? Or was that maybe a miss, you know, is that not quite right?
It's a tricky comparison to me, because I find that different people hone in on different things, both for what defines the old school revolution feel and what defines the Dragon Age feeling. It's always so tricky, right? Because we don't know for sure what people are doing with any of the games at home. One person's Dragon Age game might be much funnier than another person's, and one person's Dragon Age game might actually be very heroic, although still blood splattered and kind of unglamorous. The characters might be good guys if they all can agree to be good guys. But system-wise, part of it is, I think, the fact that the Dragon Age system, which we call the Adventure Game Engine or the Age system, doesn't obsess over certain details. It lets a fair amount of things emerge naturally from the way that mechanics and story interact. It's not exactly what, I guess, I hesitate to use some of these terms, but it's not like it's not a simulation, and it's not a narrative-heavy game, but it has room for those things if you want them. But because it's fairly rules-light in a lot of ways, it's pretty straightforward in its mechanics. I mean, almost everything in the game is essentially an ability check. That there are certainly things in common, but it all integrates very closely with one of the systems that I should single out early on when we talk about the mechanics for Dragon Age that I think make it stand out, is the stunt system that Chris Pramus came up with, which is a system by which you essentially generate action points every few rolls whenever you roll doubles. and then you can spend them to do bonus things, extra things in battle. Like you can move your opponent a few feet, you can deliver mighty amounts of damage, you can cast especially potent spells. There's lots of different options, but depending on how many points you generate, and you spend those points however you want from a little list that all players are going off of or working off of. And that gives the game a really distinct feeling of it creates an ebb and flow in battle that there's no other game that I've played that manages to capture this so in kind of a way that is both gamey but both very natural feeling. So that it's not like, I mean, you essentially get these stunt points that you can spend, but you don't know for sure when you're going to get them, so your team can't just develop one combat strategy and do that every fight. And I think it's that ability to have a game that is providing a lot of structure, but also has the freedom that a game like early AD&D did, core D&D did, that a lot of, depending on how different people play them, a lot of other RPGs strike a similar balance between mechanics and freedom. The Dragon Age does, but it's killer app, really. It's distinct features, beside from its sort of elegant interwoven system where everything kind of, there are very few stray parts. Everything pulls on everything else in nice ways. The numbers work out really elegantly. Is that stunt system, which is what makes it feel adventurous, even at the same time that it can feel gritty and bloody and dark.
Okay, cool. Well, hey, let's talk about, to the extent that we can, let's talk about what we're doing in Dragon Age 3, which is the project I'm guessing you're working on for 2012.
Yes, there's. I do have to walk a fine line here because there's some things about set 3 that I think we're that I'm going to keep ready for an announcement later this month. We're still we've been actually toiling on set 3 for quite a little while, and as quietly as we can, kind of in secret almost. And but we're going to do a open beta for set 3 as we did with set 2, so that a lot of the components of set 3 are going to go out in front of beta playtesters. When exactly, I don't want to say it because we're still on a couple of deadlines between here and there that I want to make sure get hit. But so a lot of the components from Set 3 will be released online for people to play with and send us their feedback so that we can get the maximum amount of exposure to the rules so that we can get the maximum amount of stress testing done.
Now, is that going to be like Set 2's beta was, where it was open, or is this going to be a closed to only a select few, select group of gamers?
It'll be an open beta. Because the set's a little bit bigger, I think it might represent a slightly different percentage of the set that is open than set 2 was. Like we may end up opening about the same amount of material, but that would be that wouldn't be all of set 3 because set 3 is considerably larger. Because it covers, of course, the levels 11 through 20. So there's a fair number of new spells, new monsters, and all sorts of stuff. Because of when we want to get the open beta going, for example, we may release a couple of iconic new monsters that represent two or three other monsters, if you will, kind of behind the scenes, see how that monster tests, learn the lesson from that monster, and apply those lessons to other monsters. But ideally, it'll be an open beta in the same sense as Set 2, and we'll have, even if we have sort of a staggered release in which we release stuff in stages of information, stages of release, we'll still end up getting to release most of the mechanical elements of the game openly so that anybody who wants to give Dragon Age a shot and hasn't had a chance to really take set one or two for a spin, maybe they've got them, but they haven't wrapped up another campaign or they're only played up to fourth level or something, can jump ahead, level up their characters or do whatever they like and take set 3 for a spin for us.
Now with set 3, you know, going back to set 2, The thing that really takes the video game player and has them easily able to adapt to the pen and paper system is that, like you were saying earlier, the ease of play. But at the same time, yeah, a lot of the elements that were in the game are also in the pen and paper game. Now, when you look at set 2, you had the concept of specializations that you encounter later on in the game of Dragon Age Origins, that hits in set 2. Is there something that we can expect in set 3 that's going to be similar?
The two big things that set 3 does, one is kind of an homage and one is kind of a departure. How much can I say without making... So part of what we do is we're delivering a lot of spells and monsters and new equipment rules and fulfilling some of the promise of the previous sets and of the Dragon Age video games by delivering content that is directly inspired and will be sort of similarly beloved and familiar to Dragon Age players already.
You have a Chantry Templar right behind you ready to swing something heavy if you say too much, don't you?
I do. He's here. And he's not saying anything. I don't know why that is, but and he's got like the big pauldrons, and pauldrons always intimidate me. But the
set three, yep.
So I'm sorry, set three has the so there isn't a new element that we're adding directly from the video games as much as we're adding more specializations and additional spells, but we're adding a lot of content that is essential to running a high-level RPG campaign that fulfills the promise of how, for example, at the end of Origins, spoiler alert, you get a peek at higher levels of power, of higher levels of, like, national power, where, I mean, in Origins, you spend a fair amount of time actually dealing with kings and their ilk. So we're going to have a lot more material that empowers high-level play, including movers and shakers on a national level, on a political level, people who can do things that are harder to do, frankly, in the two existing video games, so that you can do things that are uniquely tabletop. I suppose I can say we're still in the testing of this level, but for example, one of the things that we'll have is we'll have a mechanism that doesn't put mass combat in the background, and it's not a, I don't want to say that it's not a battlefield like a system for steering armies like miniature combat, but Chris Premis, who of course designed the core system here and is sort of the central visionary behind mechanics of Dragon Age, the tabletop game, is designing a system that brings the battlefield to the table so that your players can take part in the kinds of wars and battles that have occurred largely off-screen thus far in Dragon Age, or have occurred in cinematics and such. And so those are some of the kind of killer app directions that Set 3 delivers, are a whole power level, not just in terms of, like, character level, but in terms of what is achievable and why a character would want to be earning the money they've been earning for the last 10 levels, what they can do with it.
Nice.
So on the one hand, yes, while we're touching on a lot of existing canon, we're also focusing a little bit on things that we can do more easily and at these levels than the video games could do.
Now, with the advent of Set 3, you know, so much of the game harkens back to the video game itself. Is there anything coming out in Set 3 that we're not going to see in one of the games? Is there anything that you guys are doing that might show up in a game later on, like a video game later on?
You know, it's tricky to say what the how much of what we write turns around and inspires the video game developers. They're usually, I mean, they've got so much of the world sketched and drawn and written down and devised and done through concept art that thus far, especially right when you consider that the pen and paper game is largely meant to take place during the Fifth Blight, the blight that the first game is set during.
Right.
So while we can exchange or expand some of the lore for various lands and detail corners of Ferelden and bits of background and fluff and lore that the video games haven't developed, and some of what we've done is inspired directly by, for example, texts that we get that didn't make it onto screen in the video games, but are as true to the lore as anything else that was written by BioWare. And some of the things that we write become lore and are truer in the long run. But there's no one thing that, like, I can point to yet. And again, this is I'm still kind of the neophyte on the developer gig, but there's no one thing I can point to yet that we've done in Set 3 that has turned around and said, well, and that's going into, you know, some future DLC, or that's becoming a part of Dragon Age canon or anything. The development and approvals process is complicated enough that it's too soon for me to say for sure. I will admit that I'm planning a few things in the hopes that BioWare will look at them and go, well, that's great, we want to use that. But that always has to come second to making sure that, that we create things that the tabletop player says, that's great, I want to use that. Because there are, while everything that we do, we want to please and get approved by BioWare and has to obviously to make it to the printed page, as far as game design, trying to design a tabletop RPG that is also going to segue into the video game is kind of like serving two lords, and so it's easier not only to pick one, and if I ever have to pick that battle, then I'm going to pick the game that I'm actively working on. So we're the only ones right now serving that tabletop audience for Dragon Age, and BioWare doesn't necessarily need, I don't think, any more cooks in their kitchen. They've got a pretty amazing staff up in Edmonton as it is. So.
Now, do you guys have access to their artists, or are you guys totally doing everything in-house?
We use a combination of art from out of BioWare's catalog. So what it is that we can, and sometimes we may pick art out of various sources that we've seen during development docs and such, or we may say, so what do you guys have that we haven't seen yet as far as art for the Kunari or art for City Elves or something? But we have a really wonderful art director named Hal Mangold, who is the art director and graphic designer for pretty much everything Green Running does. He has a great crew of artists that he works with that have made it such that a lot of the art in the Dragon Age books to date, like we played a little game early on where I tried to guess what was concept art and what was done for the RPGs, and it was very difficult for me to guess. A lot of things that I thought were one turned out to be the other. So he's done a great job of merging new art with the art that that comes out of BioWare. So it's a mix. There's great art in both regards, but obviously when we're creating new things, we can't always go to BioWare and say, what do you have as far as, you know, for this little village that we made up and have put here in Ferelden? They may not have art that matches that. So we go to house very talented artists and have them do action illustrations and villains and monsters and things like that for us.
Now, how much Dragon Age, like, lore and how much of the games or books did you have to suck in to get familiar enough with all of this huge body of material that they now have?
You know, part of the truth is that not only, as far as I'm concerned, I'm still on the schedule that I'm in. I'm still in intake mode. it doesn't end. I'm playing through both Dragon Age Origins and Dragon Age 2 again. And once I finish this playthrough of Dragon Age 2, I'm going to go back and replay Awakening. But because there are so many, I mean, particularly in Origins and in Dragon Age 2, there are so many different ways to play those games that even knowing, having read it out of documents and having read the guidebooks and having read the RPGs and taken in everything that I can take in that's in print or that's on a hard drive, that it's just not the same as seeing what happens if you play Dragon Age 2 without Fenris, for example. If you just don't take that quest at the beginning that unlocks Fenris and seeing how the game unfolds. So it's kind of a nonstop intake process at this point. I told myself that I gave myself sort of a timeline of a number of months that I would be doing intake at the same time I was doing development. But I think realistically speaking, I'm just going to end up replaying Origins and or Dragon Age 2 and or Awakening. And everything I can is just part of my diet right now, the same way my playtest campaign is, that I'll just keep playing them until either we run out of Dragon Age stuff to produce or until somebody replaces me, until I just, my withered hands can't work the controller anymore.
Now, is there a blog or some sort of RSS feed that folks can go to keep updated on progress of Dragon Age Set 3?
We're going to do, once we get to the open beta, I'm going to do more regular postings, which will be available at the Green Ronin Dragon Age product line site, which is greenronin.com/dragon_age. And we have blogs that are going up regularly at greenronin.com that we're calling the roundtable that we've been doing once a week that are coming out every Friday. Friday. We're only on number 3, I think, launches this week. But when my turn comes up, which is in 2 weeks, I think, which will time out rather well in terms of when I get the next sort of milestone for some of the Set 3 materials happening. I'll have new news about future downloadable content for the tabletop RPG like we just did the Faces of Thedas Talus piece. We have a couple more pieces, I think, at least one, maybe two more pieces of free downloadable content coming for Dragon Age, hopefully before Christmas time. And so as that stuff gets announced between the front page blog and then hopefully I'll start blogging regularly about the beta at the Dragon Age website, at our Dragon Age website.
And if folks go there, they can also find a link at the bottom to your Dragon Age Facebook page.
Yes, that's correct. Where, because I am still learning all the various avenues of communication that we have, I tweet sometimes at Green Ronin Pub on Twitter. I've been tweeting Dragon Age questions, and then obviously as we release DLC and we announce the open beta, we'll do all that through Facebook as well.
Okay, I have to ask, and if someone is interested in getting into the open beta, they need to look at the Green Marine Dragon underscore Age page, or is there somewhere else to keep their eyes on?
We'll be sure and announce it at the main Green Marine page for sure also. So there, our Dragon Age page and on Facebook will all be great places. When we launch the open beta, I will be very loud about it.
Any kind of ETA on that?
Well, I really don't want to make a promise I can't keep, but I'll say that we're moving now through the current milestones of set 3. I just got new text in, as a matter of fact. So we're moving through the new milestones at a pretty good clip, so it's not as far off as I think some people think it is. I'll say that.
Okay, so we can safely say sometime in 2012, hopefully in the first half of the year.
Now, do we have a set of quick start rules that folks can pick up, maybe to test drive the system and see if they want to buy into set one and then possibly set two?
We do, as a matter of fact. There is a really great set of quick start rules in an adventure that was produced by my predecessor, Jeff Tidball, at for Free RPG Day this last year, which is an adventure with its own characters and all sorts of stuff, and is located in the far right sidebar at the Dragon Age page at greenronin.com. If you look, and there's a list of, frankly, it's a bunch of red freebie items and various other links and developer journals and things on the right-hand side of that page.
Oh, yeah, it's near the top. Third link down, Dragon Age RPG Quick Start Guide. It's the third link down on the right-hand side.
Yep, and it's a free PDF, and technically you can still find print copies of that floating around various places. I imagine that there are some that some stores may still have a copy or two lurking about, and I know for a fact that people have been selling them on eBay, which is not what you're supposed to do with them. But you can get the PDF absolutely free, and it contains the whole kit and caboodle. So.
All right, cool. And we'll go ahead and throw a link up for that on the podcast. You guys still there?
Oh, yeah, still there.
Oh, sorry, I had a funny quiet spell. I just got worried. Okay. Well, hey, right about the half hour, 45-minute mark, anything else we want to talk about before we call it a podcast?
What do you think about the comics, Will? Have you tried them?
You know, the comics are actually the only thing right now that I haven't had a chance to take in. And admittedly, I actually held off because they weren't essential to set 3, and at the time I was taking in everything as essential to set 3, and I had to prioritize. So, unfortunately, I don't have a meaningful opinion of them as yet, but I will say that from the material that I read on them, I was essentially saving them as a dessert item because they sounded so good that I didn't have to, like, I'm not reading them on the clock. I could, but I'm going to read them in my free time because I'm really looking forward to them.
Yeah, the nice thing about them was, you know, after the first Dragon Age, where you know, I played a pretty combat heavy character in the first Dragon Age, and then second one, you know, you play Hawk, and irregardless, he's pretty blood soaked through the whole thing. You get to the comics, and it's a real change of pace as far as like the protagonist goes. So it's a really neat way to experience Dragon Age apart from the actual games.
I'm really looking forward to it. And that's what I'd heard is that it's part of the great thing I think about Dragon Age, and especially as we see, you know, the games, the video games come out at such a rate, and the sets, our big boxes have been separated sometimes by circumstance and sometimes by the fact that there's a lot of development that goes into them. But Dragon Age as a setting, it's still, we've just scratched the surface of it. So there's so many different ways to tell stories in it. And that's one of the things I'm doing my playtest campaign right now, which is in part for the adventure that goes into set three and for some downloadable content in the future, is trying out some different tricks and techniques with the way that you, the kind of characters that you use and the way you tell stories set in Thedas, some of the variety of that. I think there's a lot of mileage still to be had just to define what makes Dragon Age Dragon Age.
And hey, for any listeners who were too lazy to go to the Green Run website, and shame on you if you are, tinyurl.com/dragon-age-qs, as in quick start, will take you to the visually sumptuous 35-page quick start guide for Dragon Age.
Nice.
Lovely.
Yeah. See, I'm dual tasking. I'm very efficient. So, all right, cool. All right, anything else you guys want to cover? Will, Walt?
Pick up Dragon Age.
If you know what's good for you, your mother would want you to.
Just hey, my wife. My wife's a Kinari, so pick it up or she'll come visit.
Will, any closing thoughts?
Just to reassure everyone that when we begin the open beta, I will be as loud and obnoxious about it as possible so that hopefully you won't miss it. We really want people's input on set three. We want this to be as strong and satisfying as I think the first two sets were, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what people think of what we've produced and are developing for set three.
Okay, and they can follow you, obviously, greenronin.com, good place to look, Greenronin Pub on Twitter. We mentioned it to go. They can find you on Facebook. What's your personal Twitter, Will?
I am WordWill, WORDWILL.
Okay, nice, nice. Okay, folks, that's Will Hindmarch. You know where to find him. And thanks to both Walt and Will for joining me. Really appreciate your time, fellas.
Thank you much.
Thanks so much.
And this is the Banff. I just like saying, this is the Banff podcast signing off until next time. Thank you very much.